awarded its gold medal to Harold Cramer, very appropriately. And just at that time, the president of the society was Harold Wilson, currently the Prime Minister of Great Britain, but at that time, leader of the opposition. And we were very curious to know what sort of speech Wilson would make. Well, he said, now, Professor Bohr, of course, Professor Cramer, I mean, we've all been admirers of yours for a great many years, and many of us remember the first thrill with which we opened your book on random variables and probability distributions. And, of course, one of the great treasures we owe to you is the theorem that if two random variables are normally distributed, and if they are independent, but if you have two random variables which are independent, and if their sum is normally distributed, then each single one of them is normally distributed. And then he gave Bohr the medal. He gave Cramer the medal. Professor Dinkins' brandy is too strong. Story to tell properly. But anyway, we thought that that Harold Wilson did very well to remember about the independence part. Because I remember in 1938, when I was a student, seeing the first edition of it and writing to my teacher in Oxford and saying, well, now look, there is this book called Random Variables and Probability Distributions, which looks very interesting. Do you think I ought to buy it and read it? And he wrote back to me and said, I don't know about probability, but Bohr is, but Cramer is all right. And Cramer was very pleased because Cramer said to me, the reason I came to write that book is entirely because G.H. Hardy said to me when I visited him in Oxford, I have a feeling that probability theory might perhaps sometime become a respectable part of mathematics. But what people write about it at the moment is mostly nonsense. And I think that you, with your great interest in actuarial science, might be the right man to try to start a new trend in the subject. Why don't you try to write a book, for example, one of the Cambridge tracts in mathematics and physics? Shortly after I went to Cambridge in 1962, Besikovich wrote to me, and at that time he was beginning to be a very old man, and he said that he'd been looking back among some of his early work, and in fact his first published paper, published in the Academy, I think, of St. Petersburg, I think it was called in those days, was an article about approximations to the Bernoulli distribution. And Besikovich had the opinion that the theorems he proved then had been forgotten, and very much sharper than anything available today. Would I please look at these? If I cared to call on him, he could show them to me. So I went to his rooms in Trinity College in Cambridge, and there he had ready these papers. They were in Russian, of course, and I was ignorant then, as I'm ignorant now of the important languages of Europe, and so I couldn't really assess them properly, and I tried to think of something diplomatic to say, and eventually I said, well, Professor Besikovich, perhaps the right solution would be for you to come and visit the statistical laboratory and give us a seminar on this subject, and he said he would. So a week or two later he came to us, and we were all very excited, and Besikovich was of course always a good speaker to have, because everybody knew that while you might not understand what he said, the way he said it would be a sufficient reward for listening to him. And he talked for about 20 minutes about this rather boring topic about the approximation to the Bernoulli distribution, and then he said, I must stop, I have no legs. And so we let him sit down, and he looked really rather ill, and we were afraid that perhaps he was going to have a heart attack or something. And to quieten him down, we said, "Professor Besakovich, perhaps you'd like, not, don't talk any more about the Bernoulli distribution, just chat to us in a general sort of way about your early life in Russia and the mathematicians you met then and anything you think that we might find interesting." So he began to talk to us about Markov. And of course this was very interesting. And now I'll try to remember what he said and approximately the way he said it. He said, "Markov novishi san, become mathematician. Mathematic make man unhappy. Markov wishes some historian. Historian have archive. Historian visit archive. He take down manuscript. He blow dust of manuscript. He copy manuscript. He put back manuscript in archive. His work is done." But of course his son became a mathematician after all, didn't he?
Yeah.
So, Paul-André Meyer, who will be remembered, I suppose, as one of the great probabilists of this era, that illustrates the difference in point of view between the French school and the English school. There was a meeting in the University of Durham last year, to which Meyer came, and many other Frenchmen too. And some of these people were probabilists, like himself, and some were analysts. And after a while, of course, the English, you know, are very taciturn people and are not inclined really to interrupt any interesting discussion. They much prefer to listen to it. And after a while, it became a sort of dialogue between the French analysts and the French probabilists. And there was a question from one of the analysts, and Meyer said in a rather irritated tone of voice, "Well, that's a very stupid question," said. "You don't seem to understand that probabilists are interested in martingales. And what probability is about is taking one martingale and making another martingale out of it. That's what probability is."
Yes. And what about your opinion? What is the main thing in the probability theory?
Making statistics.
Yes, I agree. I think it has, it all has its roots in, originally in inquisitive, curious inquiries into actual facts that are puzzling and difficult. But there is a profound distinction between the French point of view and our own. We're having this conversation in Poland, so this is a very good story to tell. Jerzy Neyman was given a scholarship by the Polish government in the early 1930s to come to London. And I think the reason was this, that he'd written a large number of papers on statistics in Poland, but no one in Poland was able to estimate their value. Mm-hmm. And they couldn't decide whether to give him a permanent position or not. And they decided that the only solution was to send him to London to a university college and seek an opinion from Carl Pearson that if this was favourable, then Neyman would get a job. This was really the situation. So Neyman arrived in London knowing no English. And there were a lot of very scandalous stories about what happened while he didn't know any English, but I won't tell you on this machine. And after a while his English got better. And he went in every day to the statistical laboratory in University College, and nobody paid any attention to him, and he sat working away at his desk, and he felt very neglected. and made this reform. And after about 3 or 4 months of this sort of treatment, Carl Pearson stopped one day as he walked past and said, "Oh, you're the young man from Poland. Well, I suppose we had better give you some work to do. Now, a very interesting problem is," and he proceeded to describe some problem which he thought needed solving, and Naaman let him finish, and then he said, "Well, Professor Pearson, I'm glad you think that's an interesting problem, because I solved that in a paper which I published while I was in Poland." And Naaman said, "Oh, well, probably you didn't get all the details completely correct. Anyway, you only published it in a Polish journal. So what I suggest is that you get some help here from some of the other people and translate it to English, and we'll correct it, and we'll fill in the gaps in the argument, and if it's good enough, we'll publish it again, properly, in Biometrica." And so Naaman, who has a very, sometimes has a very patient strain in his personality, he wrote it all out again in English. And one of the points that was made in this argument was, and I think it was the first proper proof of the fact, that if you have a sample from a normal distribution, then the standard deviation and the arithmetic mean as statistics are statistically independent of one another. And the proof that this was so, and the statement that it was so, formed a substantial part of the paper, and the main argument depended on that. And Pearson read it through very carefully, and then he came to Naaman and said, "Well, yes, this is a very interesting result. I think this is almost good enough to publish in Biometrica. In fact, I think with a little tidying up, even, we will publish it in Biometrica, but there are a lot of things here which, of course, you don't know how to speak properly or only Polish, but we will help you to get it right. I mean, for example, where you say that the sample arithmetic mean and the sample standard deviation are independent, in England, what we would say is that they were uncorrelated." So Naaman tried to explain to him that there was a difference, you see? And they got more and more angry with each other. And Naaman says at the end, Pearson hammered on the desk, and he said, "Young man, it may be so in Poland, but it is not so in England." And then they parted company, and Naaman was afraid, very afraid indeed, that he would be sent back to Poland with a very bad report, and he wouldn't get a position, and his career was finished. And at this point, J.O. Irwin intervened. He was a research assistant in a statistical laboratory and had been listening to what was going on, and he talked to Egan Pearson, and he got Naaman and Egan Pearson to talk to one another, and they discussed the distinction between being independent and being correlated. And then Egan Pearson, the son of Carl Pearson, was given the task of persuading his father that this was a real difference. And then Naaman had to wait for quite a month or something like that, wondering what on earth is going to happen. And then one day, Carl Pearson came up to him and said, "Well, we've been looking through this manuscript of yours, Mr. Naaman, and, well, I think we have to alter that last paragraph where you say the sample mean and the sample variance are independent. What we think you ought to say is, are independent, that is to say, that if the joint distribution is written down, then it factors into two factors, one factor of which only involves the sample mean, and the other factor only involves the sample variance." I think it's a very nice story, and what I like about it is that it's almost unique among the stories about Carl Pearson in that it shares him in a rather good light. Well, of course, when Carl Pearson and
and W.F.R. Weldon founded Biometrica, I can't remember now the year, but it was about 1890 or 1900 or something like that. The young Pearsons, the small children, realized what was going on, and Egan Pearson tells me that they made up a poem. Biometrica will come out on the 31st of October or thereabout. And they were very interested in what their father was doing, and they decided that they would start a new journal of their own. And they were going to call it Biochronicle. And the interesting thing is that the first, and in fact the only number of Biochronicle, actually came out before the first number of Biochronicle.